So tonight it's my great pleasure to welcome Kenny Johnson here to this space. He is the founder of this sacred space. I'm pointing this out and this out to you because on your way out there will be some of these brochures for you to take and this mailing list to sign up to help support the important work that Kenny is doing. I had a chance to meet him very briefly just a few weeks ago. I always go by first impressions with people, and my first impression was extraordinarily positive. So I'm looking for plus I have a recommendation from a dear friend whose recommendations I do not take lightly. So we're delighted to have him come to speak in our store about his work and his life. Thank you so much for coming.
Well, thank you. A year ago, I met Glenn in San Quentin prison. He didn't know anything about me or what I did, and I didn't know anything about him. He came to my group. He took a chance on me, what I had to say. Glenn, he opened his heart. He poured it out. He cried. And just him crying brought that made the next 90 days a family. We became a brotherhood, didn't we, man? His opening up, that was the glue. That was the sacred circle. Good to have you out here, man. Don't go back, man. Good to see you, man.
Sorry.
That's all right, man.
That's how we got here.
Start. I just, he got me started. I mean, I never knew what I wanted to do in life until about 2.5 years ago. And that's when I started doing prison work. I started going back into jails. I really didn't want to go back to prison. As a matter of fact, once I get out of prison, if I drove by one or anything, I would turn my head, make sure I didn't, I didn't look at it too long, I just had a major fear, phobia about prison. But I kept having all these dreams that kept pointing toward me being incarcerated. And being a student of dream interpretation, I said, well, I know there's something here, but what does it mean? And just over the years, me kept looking at it, this dream kept repeating itself. I would wake up in a cold sweat, like, I can't go back to jail. What am I doing? Am I smoking too much dope? Am I drinking too much cognac? I mean, what is it I'm doing too much of that's going to get me back in jail? Now I start cutting out things, cutting out, making sure I don't go back. But I didn't realize what was happening was that I hadn't paid all my dues. I hadn't done all my time. So I had to go back in and pay and keep, giving back. Now that I go back in, I don't have those dreams. They don't torment me anymore. It's always a letting go of something. Once I let go of that fear of, I might have to go back to jail. What is it? Once I open up to that, then I can see what needed to be, done. Once I opened up, then the prison project came. I got off alcohol the same year. Things just shifted because I opened up to it. As long as you keep pushing and resisting, pushing back, pushing and resisting, then it keeps pushing and pushing, and your life gets worse and worse. And the dreams get worse and worse. But once you embrace it, let it go, open up, then, as we all know. Glenn and I always had, we had a running conversation because I would throw some Advaita at him, I'd throw some Zen at him, I'd throw some Buddhism at him, and he would push it back. I ain't ready for that, you know, I'm still in kindergarten, you know. Don't throw that heavy stuff at me, you know. Like we all one, there's nothing but this. He didn't want to hear all that. But still, no matter what, we weren't having a Buddhist conversation or a Zen conversation or a religious conversation, but yet still, he heard something. Just me showing up every day, sitting down, saying, okay, we're going to sit here and we're going to talk about my girlfriend. We're going to talk about his girlfriend. We're going to talk about your brother. So just having a conversation and carving out a sacred space, something just happens. And so something happened. Something happened for me. Something happened for you. It's good to be free from prison and free in here. When I met my teacher and I had the spiritual awakening, before I met her, I just wanted to be free of prison. I had done so many years in prison, I just wanted to be free of prison, the physical structure of prison. That's all I wanted. That's all I wanted. That was it. But then I met my teacher, Gangaji, and I got icing on the cake. Spiritual freedom. That wasn't it. That was just the initiation. That was just putting me on the path of cleaning myself up. Because there's some things I had to go back and clean up. The beauty of it is, I didn't have to go back and rob a bank to realize that robbing banks didn't pay, thank God. But that my alcoholism, those dysfunctional things that kept me in prison, kept me in incarcerating my mind, they had to go. And alcohol was a big one for me. It was like the big gorilla that was shitting on me. I couldn't really be free. I couldn't really do this kind of work until I got free of alcohol. Once I got free of the alcohol, then I could see all my fears, all my doubts, all my apprehensions, all the dysfunctional things that I've been running from. I'm in the process of writing a book, and right now the title is called This Sacred Space. And I was asked by the author, it was an interview style book. I talk into a tape player and they write it out, transcribe it. She says, "Well, you met the teacher Gangaji and you had this awakening. Was that it?" Well, for 2 years I was in this place of bliss. I was pure bliss. But then it was time to come home. 90 days before coming home, I remember this so clearly. I freaked out, I panicked. Oh shit, I gotta go home. I'm not ready for this. Am I going, is this bliss, this truth that I've experienced, is it gonna carry me? Is it gonna keep me safe? Go ahead.
Are you talking about the 90 days before you got out of prison?
Yeah. 90 days before I got out of prison.
I had that too.
Yeah. Will this carry me? Will this grace be able to negotiate through all these different eddies, tributaries, rivers, oceans, seas? Will I be able to navigate through all this crazy stuff? Because, you see, once I met my teacher, there was an emptying out. There was nothing left. It was an empty vessel. Because that old Kenny Dale, he had to go. That old Slim, he had to go. So there was nothing but this empty guy. And I said, okay, what do I do now? I was so empty. My daughter took me to an ATM machine and took my finger and said, boom, 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 because I didn't know how to operate an ATM machine. I was totally empty. I was like a child again. I'm 59 years old, but I don't know if I'm 21 or 32 or 15 at times, or two. Ask what problem, I might be 1.5, you know, where I act sometimes on the house. So it's a growing up process. I had to men and women, when we have this awakening experience, it's like growing up again, all over again, starting all over. But the beauty of it is, once I got out of prison, this grace that I experienced at my teacher's feet in 1994, September, has carried me, has provided for me, has taught me. Baba says it's the guru principle inside of us. The guru, which guru means darkness and ru means lightness, that which guides you from the darkness to the light. That is what inside of me, that's been guiding me all through everything. So this inner guru that I didn't really know about, which I was projecting onto my teacher, Gangaji, but she kept pushing back on me, but I kept pushing back on her. You know, it's like I kept saying, well, you the one. She said, no, you the one. Now I'm getting it. The guru's in here. The true guru's in here. The guru principle's in here. Everything's in here. Inside of me. I'm getting that now. Yes, how you doing, man? Good to see you. Your name?
Greg.
Greg. I take questions. I'm open to questions. Or we can sit here and look at each other all night. I'm okay with that.
So when did you get out?
1997. Yeah.
And you've been doing what you do in this context since?
2.5 years ago.
2.5 years
ago. Yeah.
So what were you doing in the intro?
1990. This is what we're talking about writing about. 1997, when I got out of prison, I took any job that was thrown at me. Day jobs, whatever, you know. And I had never worked in my life until 1997 at a legitimate job. I worked in prison, but, you know, just paying taxes and all that kind of stuff. I hadn't done it since 1997. And I knew I wasn't good in the labor force. I knew I wasn't good. 60 year old, I was working in a plastic factory, a bottling company where they would take these palm olive bottles, plastic bottles, and they would make them and they would stick them in these boxes. Then you had to do this and do that there and make my Timmy go thing and push it down there. And I had a whole thing I had done. Like, okay, this ain't gonna work. This ain't gonna happen. If they want me to get 15 boxes stacked, this ain't gonna work. Because I just didn't have the skills, the work ethic, or the skills to do it. You know, there was women that were 60 and almost at retirement age that was doing my work for me, just to, you know, they were doing their work and they would come over and help me with mine. I said, how do you do this? But they were so used to working. I didn't have any work skills. I was it was just through the grace that I was able to make it through all those different jobs. You know, my supervisors, they would like me and they would just give me promotion. I said, why are you promoting me? I'm not producing my quota. But they kept, you know, so it was just through the grace, you know. Because I had one intention, and I have one intention. That is to stay out here. That's it. That is not to rob anybody. That is not to rape anyone. That is not to kill anyone. That is not to do any of those things that I used to do. My job is to stay out here and to have a conversation with you and have a cup of tea with you.
So now you go around to prisons and talk to people. Mm-hmm. Just tell me your story.
Yeah.
I was wondering about like opening it. It seems like so many people have that kind of, are locked into that kind of life, or they are kind of closed off.
And yes, yes.
What is it that helps them to open? Mm-hmm. Does it come from above, or is there?
They actually, you know, you have. They're ready. They actually are ready. Yeah. He was ready. Glenn was ready.
Yeah.
I was ready. You know, I mean, it's an analogy of fruit is ready. You know, I mean, I go to plum trees now. If I know when a plum is ready or berry is ready, I can say, it'll fall in my hand. If I have to do like, it ain't ready.
Yeah.
If I got to say, it definitely isn't ready. And I don't want to eat it anyway, you know.
Right.
So I was simply ready to hear, you know, the truth, the teachings. You know, I was simply ready to hear that God's grace is here now. I was ready to hear that. He was ready to open up. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, I remember from our class, we never really had a set agenda. It was pretty much, it came. The agenda came like the minutes before class started. Mm-hmm. So one, like, it was probably always about a group of 8 to 10 guys, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it always seemed like one or two guys has something going on.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we would work with. But by the time class got out, everybody got something out of it.
Yeah.
And that's just how class went.
Yeah.
Which prison was more damning?
More what?
Which prison was more damning?
For me living in or working in?
You know, no, the prison, this physical structure of the building, and then the prison that you were trapped in for so many years.
The one I created for myself. The one I created for myself. You know, I was never going to. You know, I was never going to be free until I heard these teachings. That was just that simple. Matter of fact, I even said to the guys in prison, I said, "Listen, I said, when Gandhi came to prison, I had one more ace up my sleeve. I had one more hustle. And she was talking to me about Sai Sung, and I kept saying, yeah, but I got this here. Man. I kept it there. I got this here. No matter what you say, I got this here. One hustle. I had one more hustle. I'm 44 years old. I had never been successful in the hustling game, in the criminal life. You know, I mean, I had 7 felony convictions, so that goes to show you that I was not a successful criminal, whatever that was, you know. But I still had one more hustle because that's all I knew. I didn't know anything else. And so, after the meeting, Ganji left, and I checked, it wasn't there. That ace I had, it wasn't there. But what she left was this truth. What she left with this joy, what she left with this freedom. And she took that hustle, and I have never regretted the trade-off. Because that little hustle I had was so measly, so lame, and so piss poor. I wouldn't be here if I hadn't tried to pay that one. Yes.
Is it fair to say that in 1997, when you got out,
mm-hmm.
that you justifiably were terrified of getting out 90 days before when you had that experience? Because what you encountered when you got out
mm-hmm.
was something that was you had no preparation to encounter.
Yes, that's right. Yeah.
So how did you come to run out of steam on the old patterns and make a shift 2.5 years ago? What was it that brought an end to whatever, that 1997 to the 2005, whatever period? How did you shift out of that?
Well, rephrase it.
Well, when you get out of prison, mm-hmm. you were in a certain state.
Right.
But you didn't know how to live in the world with it.
Right, correct. Right.
So you did the best you could, but you didn't know too much about making your way in the world.
That's
work.
True. So true. So true.
And you had a lot of help for
I
the
did.
Next 8 years. But then you haven't told us about how it came to a conclusion, how you made the shift into the next step for you.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You broke that mold somehow, mm-hmm. and you're doing something different.
Mm-hmm.
What did it take for you to do that?
I got you now. Tracking. I'm going back to my days. Okay, what happened was the first 3 years was hard. They were just hard. It really was. I mean, it was very painful. It was hard. It was bad. It was scary. It was ugly, matter of fact.
Kenny, was Gangaji in your life physically at that point?
At that time, I had the Sangha around me. But even having the Sangha around me, there was at 4 o'clock in the morning. I had this thing I had to deal with, you know. You know, I wake up in the morning, I go to him. I mean, I'll give you a good story. 50 years old, I'm out of prison now, 6 years. I celebrate my 50th birthday. And I looked around at all the people that were my age. And I went into a hell realm, because here you are, 50 years old, you got a wife, you got a house, you got a business, you got a retirement, you got IRA, everything set up. You know, so you know how, 65, you're ready to retire, you know, go boating, whatever, okay. I hope that's what you got. I'm just projecting, baby.
Okay. I'll go with that.
Okay. And I didn't have any of that. And that was so disheartening, disenchanting. So I went into a hell realm then. At the same time, the people around me saw that, and they went to Gangaji and they told Gangaji. Says, Kenny's suffering real, real bad. So she was doing a retreat that weekend. She came, and she said, let's walk. She walked from the Sasong Hall to her hotel. And on the way over there, she told me about, Kenny, you did great work in prison. You know, you're out now. Life has been hard for you. She said, and you're suffering. She just acknowledged that I was in suffering. And when she acknowledged that, oh, it's okay to suffer. Okay, this is okay. I'm suffering here. And that was sort of like just having that awareness that I could suffer, that I didn't have to, you know, hold it together. I could just suffer. And then it's opened up things. And then to follow up on that, I'm going a little deeper now, and because you opened up other doors I didn't really think about. But what happened was then people started inviting me to different places. Like Michael Mead, he invited me to a retreat, you know, with a bunch of men. We went out in the woods and did rituals and stuff like that. And I started learning about other different ways of practice, of supporting myself spiritually, you know, the meditation. I had it in prison, but I walked away from all that. So meditation, dream interpretation, mythology. So I started gathering tools to help me make a sense of this world out here, and this spiritual world, and this mythic world. And so I started gathering tools, you know, to help me through, because the tools that I had, you're right, they weren't serving me. And I didn't have any other tools to. I didn't have a magic knapsack. I didn't have anything, you know. So it was just coming out here, and it was people such as yourself and other people. I say the Sangha of all types of believers from all walks of life who sort of like just walked me through, like my daughter did this here. Well, Gangaji did that, Michael Mead did this, Jack Kornfield did this, Rupam did this, David did this. Everybody, Hillary said it takes a village. It took a village to actually raise me up. And I tell my men and women, when you get out of prison, run to an AA group, an NA group, run to a church, run to some place that people are speaking about being responsible. And that's what really saved me, was being around responsible human beings that kept reflecting back to me responsibility. Because remember now, in the prison, all you got people reflecting back to you irresponsibility and who knows what else. And just so me coming in a prison and having a group to where we can sit around and like we doing here and reflect back to each other who we are. You're a god, you're a queen, you're a queen, you're a queen, you're a queen, you're a god, you're a king. They're reflecting back to each other this. Then they can walk back to their prison yard. They walk back with some substance, something to work with, some tools to work with, to deal with this reflection that everybody's saying, you know, you're no good, you're a criminal, you're a dog, you're a liar. So they got something to reflect, to keep that up, to shield them from those fiery darts that's coming at them. So that is how he's able to walk out of this prison. That's how I was able to walk out. I hope I answered the question. I mean, I want to.
Well, you told a lot about it.
Go ahead. Keep on.
I guess maybe you told us a little bit.
Okay.
You were driving by the prison. You'd look away.
Right.
And your dreams. That's what brought you back into taking your work into the prison.
Mm-hmm. Now, what's really supporting me today, now we say 2008, what's supporting me today is that I realized I had got to the point I was doing this prison work. I was going fine. I had a tank full of gas, doing great. Driving down the highway, no problem. I go into San Quentin, San Bruno, and other places. All of a sudden, I started looking at the gas, and it kept going down. It got to E, got to the light was on. I'm out of gas now. Psychologically, spiritually, I'm out of gas. Moved to Sonoma about 3 weeks ago, a month ago, something like that. Bumped to a yoga teacher. He dropped a word, go around the corner, there's an ashram around there. I go around the corner, meet a guru named Baba. He says, you can come here anytime you want to, Kenny, and meditate, do whatever. This is part of your family. Now, that is what's carrying me now. So in other words, I have a practice now. My practice, I give at 6 o'clock in the morning, run over to the ashram, which is 4 minutes away, sit down and practice for an hour, then go listen for a darshan talk for another 30, 40 minutes, go do yoga if I need to go do yoga, then go back, you know, that's how my day started. So now that practice is holding me now. So in other words, each step of the way, there has been something there to hold me. I could not do this work any further. I knew I couldn't go any further relationship wise, job, no kind of way, unless I had got something now to support me. Because what was happening, I saw my mind turning on itself, scrambling, trying to find something, you know, to support me. Because when you're dealing with so much stuff coming at you, working with the clientele to work with, you got to have something to support you. And I didn't really know that. But as like I said, my intention is to always stay free to do this work. Just having that intention was able to bring the next thing into my life to support this awakening experience. So what was the guru knew exactly what I needed. And so I went to get a yoga, individual yoga class, but I really went to meet someone that will carry me for a while now. And so that is how I have been living my life. It's just been through the grace of. Wow. You can tell me it's out. Just through the grace. I'm not trained in Buddhism or Zen or any of those things. I'm not a psychotherapist, a psychologist, any of those things. I'm just a country boy from Arkansas that just happened to stumble into something. And thank God I stumbled into the right thing. So if I don't speak, you know, if I speak too fast or I just, you know, I wander over here, wander over there, just grab me and say, hey man, what about this? Just bring me back and I can tune in and I can slowly hone in. So I'm going to say I'm not trained in a lot of things, but my heart is good. It has always been good. So is yours.
Could you talk more about intention, what you do with intention?
Yes. What I do with intention. Open that up some more.
I've been coming across the concept of intention in a variety of psychology things I'm reading. The first thing that really interested me in the concept of intention was Carlos Castaneda's book in The Art of Dreaming, where in the dreams, when you're having them, you can't really function in them in the sense of you're in a place and you want to move to the other side of the room in the dream that you're in. And he's told that you need to have intention to move. Mm. And so he's trying to move about in his dream, and all of a sudden he just wanted to be at the other side of the room, and he was, yeah. And he realized it was his intention that had moved
that's
him.
Right, that's
so,
right.
So that's where I'm coming from with this.
Okay. We can go a number of places with that. First of all, energy is always moving. First, we're energy beings, so energy is always moving. You know, we're energy beings, first of all. But I see what you're saying, intention. In my dreams, you're right. If I want to get from here to Philadelphia, I just have to, and I'm there. That's the intention. I'm not going to answer that question, but I am going to answer the question in a different way. We are creators. We're constantly creating something. And so, and I'm going to speak about my life now. I'm constantly breathing something into life, bringing something into being. And as a creator, I have to put my mind, my focus into this vision, whatever it may be, in order to bring it into being. They say that every 6 months we're creating ourselves a body. First, we have a new body anyway, a totally new body, physical body. But what I am seeing, for as intention is concerned. Okay, I'm going to shift that. No. I'm totally going to shift that. Because we have no control. We have no control. We have no control.
In our tradition, we say that the only control we ever have is where we put our attention. Mm-hmm. Everything else is up to
we have no
thing you were looking up.
We have no control. And why I say that right now in my life, I'm witnessing my life. I know I have the desire or the intention for something to come into being. But I don't really know what's going to come into being. According to my understanding, according to my intelligence, according to everything, and according to the divine will that's moving through me, I have no idea what's going to manifest. So what I'm doing, I'm sitting and watching and waiting to see how it's going to unfold. Because it has always unfolded to my benefit, never to my detriment. So now I'm just going to watch. I'm going to trust.
Even going to prison.
Huh?
Even going to prison.
I had no intention of going to prison.
But look at what it gave you.
Right. And what I'm saying is that I had... because when you brought that, I had to go to a big... You know, I said, we really have no control. We really have no control.
But we can watch it.
And we just witness it. Watch how it unfolds in front of us. Just sit, that's the, you know, I'm right now saying, God, I can't wait to see how this is going to unfold, how this is going to play out. Because my spiritual experience from 1994 and looking back, I've always been taken care of. Just in the nick of time. One world in, another one pick up. No one world in, another pick up. So we're constantly recreating ourselves. I think I got about how many business cards?
I used to be a chump because it was like every 3 months a new business.
And every 3 months I recreated myself. I was constantly being recreated. It was like I was on a fast track of catching up. So in other words, there was a lot of suffering and trying to catch up, a lot of burning to get up to speed, be able to sit here and hold the space for 25 people, you know. Because when I first started doing this, I couldn't hold the space. I quit doing satsang. It was too much. I didn't have the psychic space. I didn't have the intellectual space. I have no space to sit here and even to take that question of yours and say, you know what, I'm not going to answer that question. I don't have to know everything. I thought I had to know every damn thing, you know. Answer every question. Go ahead.
When you're talking about space, though, you mentioned earlier the sacred space, mm-hmm. like you meet with someone once a week.
Right.
In a way, that's kind of what I would consider an intention, you know, maybe like a practice. And it doesn't mean that you're going to make things happen, but you put yourself in a condition where something different can
happen. That's true, that's true, that's true. And let me going back on a practical level, okay? You know, on a practical level, yes. I get up, I have the intention to go to saying, where am I going tomorrow? San Bruno tomorrow. You know, I get my car, I drive there. I have no idea. I have the intention of having a conversation about what happened tonight, maybe. But whatever that group needs to hear will come out of that group.
But what would happen if you had no intention?
I have no idea. Let's have no intention right now, see.
But isn't there always an intention, whether it's implicit or explicit? It's
yes.
Yeah.
And the... Go ahead. Say more.
I always think of intention as a way of being versus a way of doing.
Okay.
And I like that, you know, it's what am I going to bring to this? Am I going to bring love to this? Am I going to bring fear to this? How am I going to show up?
Right. And just having that intention of what I want to bring to the table. Yeah.
What keeps coming up for me in this conversation around attention is, you know, most days I have an intention of getting out of the way. Because if you even talk about how you come to be here in this moment, you didn't plan that. You got out of the way. Because your way in trying to fix it and manage it and control it, we wouldn't be having this conversation.
That's right.
And so for me, it's like, you know, how do I get out? What am I blocking?
You know
that suffering you're talking about. That's my prison. That's what I create that.
That's right.
Here.
That's right. That's
with
right.
my intentions.
That's a running joke I have a few people is that, but who's intending? You know? Where's the big? Who's yeah. The big? You know, we always got to go to the bigger mind.
That's right.
You know, which is sending this stuff through us for us to do its will for the constant regeneration of this earth, of this planet, until it dies out. But spirit never dies. So spirit just take, okay, I'm done with earth. Move on. Boom. And we are there. Are you okay with that, man?
I believe that.
Okay, cool. I had to check with him. We had to run the arguments about that in the joint. Go ahead, Mariana.
So I appreciate the humility with which you're presenting what you do.
Mm-hmm.
And like, I've been in prison with you and
and
experience is quite different. Mm-hmm. Like you're saying, you just want to be out and have a conversation, but like you do something really powerful there, and whether we call it intention or not, like you go and like you bring your heart, soul, and conscience, and you create a powerful space so that other people that elicits that in other people.
Right.
So I'm not so into whether it's who's intending or whatever,
right.
but you
right.
you do something more powerful than just stay out of prison and something that really like impacts a lot of people, obviously this guy and lots of people.
Right.
And I just am aware of that conversation.
Yeah, I took Mariana to San Quentin, matter of fact.
I was there where I knew her from.
Yeah. and when you go into prison, men are so focused. First of all, when you go into a prison, the energy is so thick you can cut it with a knife. So there's that mindset is so focused. So when I walk into the joint, I got to be, like you say, get out the way. Kenny can't, I can't have any distractions. First of all, walking into prison, you can't have any distractions because you don't know what's going on. You got to be on your P's and Q's. Because anything can happen. You got to be ready to either hit the ground or whatever. And so you go in totally focused. Totally focused. Totally in the moment, matter of fact. You are in the moment. And so men and women incarcerated, they have done everything under the sun, played every con under the sun. So they've heard every game, every lie. And so here you come bringing something that they've never heard. And they are trying to wrap their minds around that, boy, and that is so sweet. And that's so cool because, you know, because you plant the seed. And they take that and they say, man, but how can you be one spirit? I mean, how can we all one? Man, I got the money. And so they're playing with that, and that's the contemplating and meditating, and it just slowly seeps in. Then they come back that next week, to try to figure it out. And they don't. It's not really a challenge. It's more of a trusting. They actually trust. Am I? It's what they really trust. And I go in totally honoring that these are not prisoners. They are not convicts. They are not drug addicts. They're human beings just like myself, and I see them as that, and I relate to them as that. Nothing more, nothing less. And just the seeing of that and the relating to that opens up, they can drop their guard for at least an hour. They can drop their guard and we can have a real conversation like, what's really going on with you today? You know, how are you really feeling? One guy last week, Antoine, he just said, man, I got to go back out there in the world. I got to do something crazy. He was just being honest. He said, but what I'm working with right now, I'm going back. There was this ace, you know. So we was in a circle. I threw a pin out in the middle of the floor. I said, right there in the center of all that stuff you got to go back to is your freedom. He looked and looked and looked and looked and looked, and he looked up at me and laughed, and looked back again and laughed. That was it for that session. It was about 8 of us. Come back Monday, I look at Antoine, what's going on? Oh, Kenny, I'm empty, man. I'm like a child, starting all over again. Wow. So now, my mission, now that he's confirmed that he's had a shift, is to nourish that. Give him books, whatever it takes, just keep my mind on him, talk about him, pray for him, send him energy. So when I go back Monday, he's gonna walk with a whole bunch of books about spiritual things. Just to feed that. To let him realize that his experience is not abnormal. Because remember now, 90% of the guys around him are not thinking like that, feeling like that. So he doesn't have too much to reflect that back to him. So when they come to the groups, they have people who sit around the corner and we can reflect back to each other. You're a God. You're a king. You're a prince. You're a God. You're a king. You're a prince.
Did you literally sit in a circle?
Yes, this is just a circle. Sacred circle.
So what you're always at all times, you're experiencing each other giving you that kind of...
That's right. That's right. That's right.
The awesome thing about it is you can tell in the circle, because, you know, we always had that moment at the beginning. I know I could tell anyway who was going to give me the positive energy I needed. And when you're sitting in a circle, sometimes you may sit like this, sometimes you may sit like this, but sometimes you might be open to the whole circle, depending on where everybody individually is at. I could feel it now.
Yeah. They're off drugs, they're off alcohol, they're off a whole bunch of stuff. Mm-hmm. So now they're clean, now you're able to have a real conversation for at least maybe a year, 6 months, depending. The county jail is just one day. County jail, I gotta go straight for the jugular vein each time. I have to. Because I might see him one time and that's it. So I gotta give as much as I can that one time. Knowing 9 times out of 10, I'll see them next week because they get out and come right back. And that's what's happening a lot in the county jail. Mm-hmm. Go ahead. Yes, ma'am. What's your name?
Jeannie.
Jeannie.
My son's in the county jail right now, and he's facing 14 years of prison.
Mm-hmm.
He's 22 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And
which one? Which jail?
This is Sonoma County Jail. Now, he's been to San Quentin, and he's been to Corcoran, and he's been to Soledad. And he's 22 years old, and he just doesn't get it. He has a methamphetamine.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So he's been in several programs and just doesn't. So this time when I go to see him, he's in tears and he's really in a different place. And that's why I came to see you to see if there, you. First of all, I wanted to see, him.
Oh, yeah, of course.
And get some books that I can send to
him. Oh, yeah. I go visit him. Sonoma County Jail.
Santa Rosa.
Santa Rosa.
He's in the main detention.
I guess I can. So I had be a personal visit because I tried to get a program in Santa Rosa County Jail, and it's like, oh, man. But I can. We can go and visit. Is he open to visiting with me? Okay, good. So we'll go visit. We'll make it happen. How we do it? Best days to do. When are visiting hours?
He can have visitors Monday, Wednesdays, Fridays, and Sundays.
So can we go Sunday?
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to. We go Sunday. This Sunday coming up. Mm-hmm. So okay, we'll do Sunday. Okay, I don't have to do anything. Let's go. Okay, we'll go. And that's good. He's probably ready now. If not, we can start planting seeds. But you say he's calling you now and he's being real. It's fine. He's tired. Sometimes
he's really afraid because they're telling him that he has to have a knife on him all the time. He's a kid. He's 22, you know. And he said, "Mom, I can't take a life, and I don't think I'm ever coming out of there again, and I don't have it in me yet."
Right.
Of course, they're scaring the pants off of him.
We'll go visit. It's just you going. We'll go visit and we'll do that then, because that's a whole other ballgame. So what we do then after this meeting, we'll get off, because I'm off Saturday and Sundays. I'm off, so those are days, best days to do something. So we'll do a Sunday. I don't have anything Sunday. Sunday we can do it.
You and I should also talk, because I do a lot of addiction work, and coming off that is a topic. You need physical chemistry.
But you can't do it in jail, huh?
I know, but when he comes
up. Yeah. So you're cool. Yeah. Yes.
What kind of books are you going to give this person you talk to in
Tony? Oh, yeah. Thich Nhat Hanh, anything that, John Kabat-Zinn, Papa G, Wake Up and Roll. I mean, why you ask?
I'm just curious.
Yeah, that's right.
I mean, you're pretty eclectic in what you give. I mean,
oh, yeah, I might give mythology. I might give,
Bhagavad, for example.
Rumi,
Okay, so any kind of any spiritual path that you think is a mystical spiritual
path.
That will connect one to the higher.
I read everything under the sun. You remember in prison, people become voracious readers. We're like vacuum. We suck up stuff. So you can't give a guy enough books. He got hours to lay up in his bunk across his leg and players know. So I trust my instincts. I mean, one woman gave me 3 boxes of books, and I went to San Quentin the other day, and I started throwing them. Here, man, take them. You don't read them, give them to somebody. But this one guy, Antoine, says I've seen what, and he's going to be with me for at least another year. So I'm going to just, I'm like a mother. You take your child and you put him to your breast and you breastfeed him. Then after that, you give him, it's a process. So that's what I'm going to do with him. See, I've only been doing this work 2.5 years. Now I'm just now, sort of like I would say, I got volunteers that go in with me. Patty goes in with me. Mariana goes in with me. And I have other volunteers that go in with me. So I'm just now hitting a stride. So now I'm just now really getting comfortable with the work that I'm doing. Now how do I really garner the support, the money, all the other stuff that I have no idea about it? How did that happen? So I'm just going to sit and watch them. Watch. See how it unfolds. Since I'm not doing it anyway. Go ahead.
Have you connected with Bo Lozoff?
Bo Lozoff got me started doing this.
All right.
He got me started doing it about in January 2006. Bo was doing a talk up in Sacramento. Some friends of Gangaji invited me up. I met Bo. Bo said, I like what you're doing. I like the way you talk. I want you to go in San Quentin with me. Call this woman. I called Sarah. She got me cleared. We're ready to go in San Quentin. I'm telling everybody I'm going to San Quentin. I'm going to do prison work. I get to the gate. They don't let me in. And Bo said, I tell you what, I'm going to stay in the car. Let Kenny go in my place. And that was such a confirmation for someone that had been doing it for over 20-some years. You know, I mean, he's been doing, he's the godfather of this, you know. For him to confirm this was beautiful. So I knew then, I said, well, I got to keep doing this. But both said, I need to be doing it. So now I'm turning around now. I'm in the process of, I am so not a good business person when it comes to calling and all that kind of stuff. And I should have called Bo a week ago, but I haven't called him yet, to get his support. Because I realized this next phase of this work demands more money, more support, more people, you know, to grow it in order to touch more inmates. I realized that the work that we're doing is very powerful and effective, simply because he's not the only one. You know, there's Carlos, there's others that are out now that actually are shifting. So I realized that this is, we got something here. Now, where do we go with it?
That's good. Great work you're doing. Very good work you're doing. I applaud you.
Thank you.
How can we best help the work that you're doing? And how can we best help the men and women who are coming out?
First of all, the men and women when they come out, what I needed immediately was to put some money in my pocket so I feel good about myself. I need a job. They stressed that out in San Francisco. You talk to all the different case managers and counselors and whatever. They stressed jobs. That's cool. First of all, people need jobs so they feel good. But what's good as a job if you still are incarcerated in your mind? So, what can you do? I'm gonna be real with you, right? You write a real big fact check, or tell somebody else write a big fact check, so we keep doing this work. Or find somebody who can help me, help the brains that can help me be more effective. Because I do good work, but the business end, I'm kind of shaky.
Organizationally, do you have your own organization, or are you part of another one?
I have my own organization. It's called This Sacred Space. I have 4 volunteers go in. And we're right at the place now where there needs to be an infusion.
Can I say something? Because it's a little easier for me to say something than for him to say something about this. Kenny's carried this on his own for the last 2.5 years. And I've been going into the county jail with him since March or February, maybe.
Yeah.
And it was so powerful. I only intended to go in for one visit, and I'm getting my permanent clearance this month. What I've observed and what I've heard every single time we've gone in, whether it was the first time or the only time we see one of the men, or if it's someone coming back every time that we hold this circle, they thank us and Kenny profoundly for just showing up and taking the time to create this space, because there's what they say is that there's nowhere in their life, in any domain of their life, where they can go and have this and be held this way and have this conversation and how powerful it is. And it's really powerful for them to have it on the inside, but where they really need it is on the outside.
And so what we're seeing with the sacred space is, yeah, going into being able to go into more jails, getting more programs opened up, yes. But what we want to do is actually be sustainable enough to actually have a space where, on the outside, where we can have a small office where volunteers can come and actually do the organizational stuff that sends books to people, manages the writing letters back and forth, and taking, and when people do come out, etc., and have regular meetings on the outside. So every Thursday night at 7 o'clock, they know there's going to be someone holding space.
Like Minnie Rivers does. Every Thursday, something happening right here.
Every Saturday afternoon, right. They know there's going to be a place where they can go.
Right.
And so that's, to me, that's the next step. It's just, it's actually a physical space. It's been a virtual sacred space. You know, and that's powerful and that's important, but this is a sacred space. But now it's time to have enough of a sustainable organization that we can carry, you know, a lease and a monthly payroll for Kenny, you know, at least.
It takes a lot of energy to do this work, you know.
I'm sorry, I have one more thing.
Oh, go ahead.
The last thing I just want to say is that Kenny's, you know, the difference between other people going out and speaking and sharing truth, and what Kenny is doing is that his constituents, the people that he's reaching out to, actually can't pay for, even donate to, what he's offering.
Yeah.
You know, and so Kenny really relies on other people to get that what he's doing is valuable, and to support that. And recognize that supporting that is supporting everyone. That's supporting ourselves. So, that's my piece.
Thank you.
And I just realized that in order to keep doing, I'm going to start targeting other organizations that understand the language that I speak. Then they can get where I'm coming from. And support this work. So that's where I'm seeing how this is going to unfold next. You know, going to other teachers, even my teacher, and say, "Hey, can you hold a fundraiser for the sacred space?" You know. I don't have no problem going to any teacher, guru or whatever, and just sharing my vision and what we need, because I realize that they understand the work and not going to hold me to every nickel and dime that I spend or don't spend, because they understand what I'm doing. They totally get it. Such as, I mean, you understand that if Kenny walking down the street, he's having socks on with somebody. Just the way it is. So this sacred space is a spiritual organization that has a prison arm. Who knows? None of you might have a hospice arm. I don't know. But it's all about waking up, having a spiritual experience. It just so happened my constituency or clients or whatever word you want to use are incarcerated. Yes, go ahead.
I'm really grateful to hear what you said earlier about having a practice and that a way for this to be sustainable for you. Because it is.
Right.
And you're one person, still human,
right,
and all of that. So, you know, I'm just grateful to hear you say, you know, that you have a practice and recognize that, you know, it's not going to be Kenny that keeps it.
No.
It's the grace of something
grace.
Bigger that's going to keep us going, and it's not all about you.
No.
And I'm really, really, really grateful to say, because that's sustainability.
That's right.
And he's really, really grateful for you to say that.
Right. Yeah, so I totally hear you. Up until about a month ago, my main basic practice was dream interpretation. That was cool. But then, just through the grace, just having this. I don't know where this intention came from, man. So don't. But something said, man, you need more than this. I said, well, I don't know what I need, but whatever it is, you better send it to me quick. Because man, this gaslight has been on a long time. And I'm running out of fumes and everything. And boom, I landed at the ashram. Now I'm meditating. It's so beautiful. I mean, I jump up in the morning and Rupa was, where are you going?
I don't say that.
I'm off to get filled up. Because there's no way I could be able to hold a space for you all now if I hadn't found a practice to support me. And so I passed it right on to my men and women. I said, listen, for 5 minutes, for however minutes, during count time, stop and sit. Do one thing. You can meditate or work with the dreams. Those two things you can see. Because when you wake up in the morning, I had this weird dream. So we'll play with dreams. Then meditate on it, contemplate it, you know. So they're developing a practice. Just doing that, that will lead them, once you get out, to who knows, to church or something, you know. I heard that you are an artist.
Yes.
You is an artist, is that right? Yeah. And that you got a real big old sculpture.
Sure.
At Bodega Bay, am I right?
It's not there yet, it will be.
It will be, huh?
Next year, I think.
It's half tall, 7 feet?
It's like 6 feet.
6 feet?
7 feet.
How does that feel to know that you're going to have something that came out of you?
It's nice.
On permanent display for a while.
Like she was saying, it's not us, we're the vehicles through you, and I don't know, I guess I feel that way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's exciting, but for whatever it may bring, who knows.
Mm.
Just the fact that it's there and maybe someone will get some enjoyment out of it, I guess it's
yes.
More rewarding.
Yes. Mm. Mm. Congratulations.
Thank you.
What is it?
It's just a life-size sculpture of a fisherman. It's the mm-hmm. Bodega Bay Fisherman's Memorial sculpture.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yep. Mm. I didn't mean to put you on the spot.
No, it's okay.
That wasn't my intention. Bye. Thank you.
Kenny, I just want to say how much I can feel your heart and your caring in all of this, and it's really touching, and I can just really appreciate the gift that you are and all that you've been through, and the fact that this is who you are now, and it's just really beautiful to behold.
Thank you so much. I look at the men and women that I work with, and it's so hard to see them, you know, in the state they're in. You know, just start. It's so hard. Wait a minute, I live half my life with people like this. You know, it scared me. Like I was so. I mean, we were like crazy. The stuff we did to each other. So I'm really amazed that I'm here having a coherent conversation with you. I'll be honest with you. You know, I'm not out of my mind, you know, got AIDS and a whole bunch of other stuff. You know, I'm just through the grace of God. You know, my younger brother, he died in 1992. He died of AIDS. I said, it could have been me. It should have been me, you know. I'm just amazed. My stepfather, all them, my uncles, they all died of alcoholism, and they should have been around. I never knew my father, you know. And so I'm just amazed that I'm still here. And I'm here able to, you know, to put two or three words together, you know. And make sense out of it. I think. I don't know. Am I making sense?
Good check, man.
Yes, go ahead.
If one wanted to help you and your organization, how would we go about it? put our names on your mail?
Yes, on the right there, I have we have a brochure, we have business cards, and we have a sign-up sheet. And it's on the sign-up sheet, you see it at the very right, it'll say, you know, what you're good at. Right now, I'll be honest, what I really, 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 really need is someone that has that can say, okay, Kenny, this is what you got. You know, you do this. Okay, you need to be speaking here, you need to be going here, you need to be doing this here, and it's really make things a manager. That's what I really need. Somebody who has the time and the money to be able to make this happen. Because I said, I'm going to call Bo Lowe's off. Well, it's 2 weeks later, I haven't called Bo yet. So I missed the moment, I missed that window of opportunity. I need to call Gangaji, I need to email Eli, I need to do so and so. You know, I'm next, you know, I...
You mean you need a nagger?
Yeah, I guess. Yes,
I can't.
Yeah, right.
Be careful what you ask.
Right, just that one. Oh God. Yeah, I guess. We'll put down the nagger, okay?
Have you considered working with grant writers?
Well, that's all those things are up, and I have, but people say that, but I haven't really found a grant writer that's quick, fast, and in a hurry to make things happen. Go ahead.
I just every time I hear the word grant,
right? Thank you.
Because I run a not for profit.
Okay.
And every time I hear the word grant, it's like. It's, you know, we applied for a federal grant. I had a whole team of people. It was a great. We scored 86 on it. They funded everybody to 87. And I saw some of the projects that got funded. So for me, what I know in terms of raising funds, mm-hmm. the individual donor. Mm-hmm. is what make these sort of projects work.
They make it work, yeah.
Grants are, these are sort of kind of like pie in the sky. You get them, great. But what really makes this kind of work effective
right.
is having people support and believe, buy into what you're doing,
right.
and then, you know, show up
right.
and support that.
Right. And that's what I'm saying, and that's how, as I say, is I'm not having the intention, but I am having the intention. You know? the intention of having no intention now. But it's to see how it's going to unfold. Because I kind of know that it's through the individual donor. See, I came into this game through an individual donor. Mm-hmm. So I'm kind of biased toward the individual donor because I realized I went to a lot of workshops and they say it's always the individual donor. Matter of fact, okay, let's go back now. Mm-hmm. We go back to the federal grant and whatever else, funders. Who give them the money? Well, some person made the money somewhere and say, I'm gonna sit over here at the Carnegie Foundation. So you follow what I'm saying? So I want to say, let me just get to the guy that can write the check and understand where I'm coming from. That's where I'm moving at. That's where I'm targeting. Yeah, go ahead.
So what I'd like to just say about it is that if you're moved to support this work in any way, you'll know in your heart what you can offer, you know, from your heart, from your pocketbook, from whatever perspective. And if there's a way that you can offer financially, mm-hmm. that would be really, we would be grateful. And if there's a way to do that on a monthly basis, that's sustainable. You know, like, you know, $20 a month, mm-hmm. you know? I mean, you know, every little bit helps. But when it's monthly, when it's just come, you know, that's the real support, you know, that's, I mean, obviously, you know, writing a check, you know, a big check or whatever is always nice, but... But from my point of view, it's like that.
It's a small donor that does it.
It's just a small donor.
Yeah, the small donors make these machines run.
Looking mm-hmm. at, you know, maybe it's, you know, 4 lattes this month, you know, you know, can go to making a difference, you know, and helping to make this work. So that's one thing. And then really there's things like if you have skills around, sometimes it's just, needing someone to make, like, take responsibility for making all the contacts to open up another prison. You know, you need to talk to somebody there. You need to find out what their rules are. You need to, you know, someone needs to just make a lot of calls to make some peace happen. So mm-hmm. if you sit down and look at the whole program, maybe Kenny wants to contact you know, 10 different spiritual type organizations and say, well, we have a proposal. Can you, this is our program, this is what we're doing. Would you include us in one of your projects, you know, or one of your meetings?
Mm-hmm.
And we can talk about our program and either, you know, maybe your constituencies would be willing to donate or, you know, support us in that way and go into those. But someone has to make all those contacts and organize that stuff. So we do need volunteers and support. So everyone has different ways to give. And if you do feel called to support in some way, I'm sure that there's a way that you can, you know. And it doesn't have to be a big check, but it could be a little one, lots of times.
She thinks little, I think big. I want to say thank you, Rob, thank you so much. Jim, thank you. I really appreciate you all providing the space. This is a beautiful, I like, you know, it's just consistency. Every Thursday something's happening here. I like that. And that's why I want to be able to have this sacred space. Every Thursday, you know, we got something going on somewhere in the city, in our little office space. And so, I'm grateful, and this is what I'd like to do more of in order to raise, you know, support, get garner support, and to keep the sustainability, you know, keep it going. They said if you want to go somewhere quick, go alone. But if you want to go a long way, go with a group. Mm-hmm. I'm used to doing things quick, but now I need your support. And this is not an easy thing to do, to sit there and say, I need your support. I'm so used to going out there, I got your support. Get over here. Giving all that money out of me. Okay, look, here, fill it up. So, I can't, you know. So, and so now, you know, I had to do a whole, I'm going to tell you a story. For 5 years, I had to drive a limousine and listen to super rich, wealthy people talk about 20, 30 million, $100 million deals. I'm like, this guy going to give me a $10 tip. And I had to sit with that for 5 years.
Wow.
Until I could make peace with the rich. Because then one day I said, wait a minute. I look back. It was early one morning. I went to pick a client up. She had made all the money. She has bought her a brand new Jaguar. She lived in Tiburon. And I'm taking her to the hospital because she got breast cancer. She might die in 6 months. And that brought it all home. She's human just like me. Then that just brought it home. Then my heart opened. Then I had compassion. Then the rich could support me. The wealthy could support me. But I had to have compassion. Realize, this is a human just like me. And so that just broke that. As soon as I had that revelation, boom, the limousine job fell away. And I started washing windows. The next thing came was this organization. But I had to make peace with that. If I felt that this work was not up, it was no good, I was a con, I couldn't sit here and look you in the eye and ask for your money. But when I look to my left and see this guy right there, he's out, he just got married, and he's taking care of his family, his brothers, and there's a whole family that's happy because of what I did. And what Gangaji did, and what you all are doing, you traveled to India, you traveled all the places, you did the meditation to make all this happen. It is you that make this happen.
I couldn't be more pleased that you're doing this. For many years, I kept saying to him, counseling, hang up a shingle. You don't have to have a PhD. You don't have to have a degree. It's California. You say you're counseling. You counsel. Anybody can counsel anybody. Because he is always connecting with people, always on the phone, always helping out everybody he knows with all kinds of issues, but a lot of it's to do with the heart. So he's always given some form of satsang. I mean, all day. His phone is collecting miles. He goes through phone. And so he keep doing. He's doing the limousine work. He's doing window washing. And he got his real estate license. And I kept going. Counsel, man. Counsel. And you know, it's grace. It's time. You know, and it's it's sitting with it. It's getting, you know, the humanity that's alive in everyone, the rich. But it's beautiful to see what's really happening. Mm-hmm. As much as you have your practice in the morning, the thing I'm seeing is the results of what this prison work has given back to you.
Yeah.
Because there's a vulnerability, mm-hmm. there's an intimacy, there's an openness, there's a really willing heart that's something you carry forth with you, and it's really been coming out of, you know, the last 2.5 years.
And most people who do this work, if any type of work, if you do this counseling work, whatever, you realize that it's the clients that teach you more than anything. Mm-hmm. It's the clients that's been with me. I mean, God, if it wasn't for them, I wouldn't be where. I mean, they're just like, man, they keep challenging me. You know, they keep challenging me. Now I show up, I got to show up and be there. And it's just, man, it's just made me a better human being, this type of work. It really has. Okay. I need to check the time.
It's probably a good time to wind up. So your timing is perfect.
Okay, good.
So, if you have something you want to do.
I think it was you. You said something. You've asked Kenny how I understood your question. It was something about how he shifted habits and ways of moving.
Oh.
And what I can tell from being probably the closest person to him, seeing him in all different ways, how he deals internally, I would say he has an unbelievable willingness to look where it's the hardest. And to me, it's like where he's come through and who he is now is unbelievable. Knowing that and what he goes through and what he looks every day at, like the darkness that most people don't ever know, and the generosity that he shows everyone, it's like a blessing. And that's what I see that helps him to shift those really dark habits, is his willingness. His willingness and his absolute intention of seeing what's truthfully there. If it's dark, it's dark. But still a willingness to look and move through. And I've seen that in him again and again in really some painful places. So in terms of what you were saying, you know, it's willingness. It's this unbelievable willingness, you know, and that trust that he'll get through. So, and I knew you couldn't say that. Not like that.
I didn't even know. You always say that, but that's the answer to your question. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you on behalf of Many Rivers. Thank you. This is wonderful. Thank you for bringing this sacred space to this sacred space.
It is.
Very much appreciated.
Yes.
Well, on that note, I'll just note that this is a sacred space as well. We are owned and operated by Taiyu Meditation Center. We have the Buddhist custom of dana, or generosity, so there's a donation bowl over there. We split the what you generously give to that bowl with our speakers in order to support their work and to support the return of speakers to this space on the weekly basis, as we've spoken about. I encourage you to be generous with this work. It's clearly worth supporting in the many ways that were spoken about eloquently earlier. And I thank you for coming to our space tonight. If you're new to this space, you can come back actually and look at books on the shelves when they're not all and even buy some, which helps maintain this space and the teas as well. So thank you for coming tonight, and we look forward to seeing you again.
Thank you.
Yeah.